everybody. You're in the huddle. What a point to be the game as we are live at Middlebury College. Enjoying a good time out here. It's been a lot of fun. We had Stephen Hausch gone. I'm walking around talking to all the coaches.
Annoying all the coaches.
Wait till I get a hold of the hockey coach. See if I get my kid to transfer here. Don't believe me. There's a lot to do. But I want to get right to our guest. This is very exciting. Longtime Boston Globe writers, they're authors, they're ESPN personalities. You've seen them on Outside the Lines, Around the Horn. We met Bob at the Travis Roy tournament this past year. It's Jackie McMullen and Bob Ryan. How you doing, guys?
Hey, we're doing okay.
We made it safely.
You've made
together
it
together in one car.
All right, first thing is, what brings you guys up to Middlebury College? What are you guys doing up here?
We are both members of a panel at the school tonight run by Jack McCallum. We are the fourth member of the crew is Alexander Wolf, is a longtime Sports Illustrated colleague.
Yep.
And we're going to be talking basketball, all things basketball this evening.
Nice. I love it.
Get to talk about the Vermont Frost Thieves for a few minutes.
Oh, I thought that Alex will put in a word about the Frost Thieves.
I remember it well. That was some kind of run he had.
I don't
there.
Doubt that.
So, I mean, Bob, you've been in Vermont a lot. As you said, we talked at about the wiffle ball tournament. But, Jackie, do you have any Vermont memories? Have you been here before? Is this a first-time shot for you?
Oh, gosh, no. My daughter was a Connecticut College Camel for the basketball team.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So I was up here for 4 years. Are you kidding me? Watching, I hate to say it, the Camels thump Middlebury. Although I understand things have changed. I do understand that you've got a great coach in your midst now in the women's team, and you guys are really doing some damage.
Yes.
But also, Peter Lynch is a longtime family friend. So I got to see Peter score his 1,000 points and came up to watch him quite a bit as well. He played on the basketball team some years back. As you guys, Westford, we're from the same town.
Nice.
So I'm very familiar with these hallways. I've walked up and down these hallways quite a bit, trying to, you know, in between games.
Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to swapping stories, and we'll do that for the next half hour. But we do have the breaking news within the last 24 hours about the Red Sox and Alex Cora. So I just kind of wanted to get your opinion on that. Bob, I'll start with you. Did they make the right decision firing him? Did they have to get rid of him?
Without question. And he summed it up. He would have been an enormous distraction. It would have been an enormous distraction. It is going to be an ongoing issue, and Red Sox fans should resign themselves to the idea that much like, exactly like the Patriots fans, no one will outlive the infamy of it. The Patriots fans are all, every last one of them alive today will die with people yelling that the team was a cheater, a cheating team, and the Red Sox fans are now going to be faced with the exact same thing. It's inevitable. It's unavoidable. They might as well get used to it.
Jackie, he should have lost his job on a scale of 1 to 10. Is this like a 10? Is this like a Pete Rose? Is this a shoeless Joe Jackson thing or what?
It isn't, but he absolutely had to lose his job. And I'll tell you why, because there's a paper trail.
Right.
They were warned again and again and again. And remember, you had the little Apple Watch scandal.
Yes, that's true.
And they got off with a slap, and they were told. You know, this is the thing. So they were really have, there's no choice. No. I'm glad that the Red Sox have done this. And I'm very fond of Alex Cora. I know you are, Bob. Covered him as a player, covered him as a manager. He, you know, he's a word, the word I would have used was a man of integrity.
Right.
And no, seriously.
Right,
and, you know, for whatever reason, he decided this was okay. And listen, he's in big trouble. I think he's going to get 2 years, guys. I don't think it's just going to be one.
I thought maybe a lifetime ban, but
well, possibly.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's going to get from Houston and then on to Boston. He's got to come from
Boston. So a two-time offender here is what you're saying.
Well, yes, but almost a simultaneous offender in some ways.
But even then, once the suspension is over, he's a tainted figure. Whoever hires him will have to face a lot of scrutiny and a lot of flack. Regardless, right? So, I mean, his future, I was thinking about that a lot. What is his future? I hope he put a lot of that money away.
I have a question. Dave Dombrowski was his general manager. What about him?
Exactly.
Now, he's out of baseball at the moment, but I would assume the hammer comes down on him. And then I keep hearing about all these candidates who were coaches for the Red Sox. Well, how are they candidates? I mean, how far do you go with this? It's interesting to me that Major League Baseball decided to leave the players out of it.
I was going
to
ask you that. Why are we giving the players a free pass here? I mean, there was no tennis balls in the bat or anything like that, or, you know, too much pint, or we're giving them a pass.
They're going to tear up the entire rosters of both teams. It's so unprecedented. The nature of this transgression is so unprecedented I don't know. People don't know how to handle it. But yes, you're reading that and hearing that and hearing that people that were about the players. But the bosses sanctioned it. And in other words, somebody, their supervisor, someone that to whom they would answer, supervised it. You know what makes me laugh? I'm just throwing this out there. The one that I'm going, A.J. Hinch. Allegedly tried to destroy the monitor.
Yeah.
What is this? If you know what was happening, don't be telling me now that you tried to stop it.
Right.
You could have stopped it. Period. Yes. End of story. So I'm sorry about that. I don't want to hear about that. I don't want to hear about that from AJ.
Well, surely a baseball bat could have cured the problem in a hurry.
You know, the thing that's interesting about these people, you know, you're talking about Hinch, Jeff Lanau, Cora. These are some of the most decorated and most successful people in baseball.
Right.
I mean, these are some of the best of the best. So the question is, you know, we were talking on the way up about Deflategate, which both of us thought was a bunch of nonsense.
Right.
And let's talk about Spygate for a millisecond, in that even Bill Belichick admitted to Robert Kraft, you know, he said to him, how much did this help you? And even, you know, Belichick said, I don't know, not that much. I think this is different. I really do. I do think this did help teams. Think about a guy who's an off-speed pitcher who has a great off-speed pitch. If you know it's coming and he's a fastball, you know, he throws a fastball, but he has that
practice.
It's completely different. So I think this does have a lot of effect on wins and losses. Now, should you vacate the championships? I'm not going to go that far, but I do think it affects wins and losses. There's no doubt in my mind that it does.
But how should we Red Sox fans feel about defending what surely we're going to have to deal with for the rest of our lives? Bob, you talk about the Patriots. Well, now we have
cheetahs.
The Red Sox.
You're cheetahs, all of you. You're cheetahs.
Oh, already it's out there on Twitter. Cheetahs up there. Absolutely. Yeah. This is what, you know, it's the belt you hear about, Belichick, right?
People. Oh, and Arbach, he turned off all the hot water in the showers.
Right. The only team that's exempt from this is so far as we know, is the Bruins. You know, how you do this in hockey, I don't know. But anyway, no, how to answer your question, people just better suck it up and accept it to take the flack. You should feel, I feel, I call it loose ends. You know, this is a terrible feeling now of embarrassment about this, about this 2018 now. How much it helped, I don't know. You know, and I just go back. I don't know. It's just I'm a season ticket holder, so I've been thinking a lot about, you know, do I feel as enthusiastic about the season at the moment? Right now, no. Right now, right. I'm irked. I'm angry about the fact that they did this. I'm annoyed. I'm really irritated. I you know, it doesn't mean that the 2020 season cannot enjoyable once we get the dust settles and all that. There's still a lot of good players left in this team. Let's not forget that. There's a lot of good baseball that can be played, but you can't feel the same. But I'm always like this in terms of any individual game. I don't like what I call loose ends. I don't want the team that I root for to win on a bad call. You know, I don't. I always feel, I don't feel right about that. I never feel as happy as I would, you know. This is the larger version of that.
Right. You know, I don't know how long it will take. I don't know if it's the manager or not, but I do feel like there's a job for Alex Cora in baseball somewhere, or he's going to be okay. He's already been on ESPN and been great. I feel like some broadcasting company would hire him. I've seen Sean Payton get suspended for a year, and he gets the Hall of Fame treatment. I feel like Alex Cora can survive
Exhibit A is A-Rod, who has been somehow resuscitated, and the man was suspended for an entire season. There's no other baseball player in my knowledge in baseball's history dating back to the National Association in 1871, whoever had that punishment. Managers have. Leo DeRocher was suspended in 47 for consorting with gamblers, quote unquote. And we know that. But no player has ever been suspended prior other than A-Rod. A-Rod's just back in the, you know, good graces of the networks anyway.
Who were the greeters in the Vegas?
Any Yankees.
Who were the greeters in the Vegas hotel? Wasn't that Willie Mays and somebody else when they were canned? Am I thinking of somebody else different? I'll have to think about that. I want to know who's calling the punishment for Major League Baseball, Manfred, or some of the owners getting in his ear?
No, it's Manfred.
The owners aren't barking in his ear saying, hey.
Maybe, it's got to be Manfred, you think.
Well, if you're an owner of a Major League Baseball team, are you sure your team isn't doing this? Because I'm not.
How many are?
I would say quite a few.
It's so easy to stop. It's so easy to stop.
I would think.
You put, for henceforth, baseball has a guy, a guard, a baseball employee guarding these rooms, and you don't go in. It's that simple.
No, it isn't, because then you pay off that guard. I'm just saying. Come on.
I guess it depends on the depth of your cynicism. Then,
yeah, my cynicism is pretty. I'm from Boston.
We're
man.
All Bostonians.
What do you want from me?
So I mean, I don't think it's that hard to govern from here on out if you want to get it stopped.
Right. Well, I would like to think everybody's
stop it.
Don't you think everyone's smart enough now?
Yeah, but you would have thought after the Astros, you would have thought after the Apple Watch, your Red Sox would have been smart enough too.
Exactly. So, yes.
Yeah. But what was the penalty for that?
I don't even remember.
That's right.
Exactly.
I rest my case.
I have no idea.
I rest my case. You. You won't forget what this is.
A slap on the wrist is what it was.
I don't know if they got that even.
So now what happens with the Red Sox? Are we about to lose a bunch of draft picks? I mean, what are your honest assessment?
Well,
Houston got what they got.
Yeah, and we asked the Red Sox got to get equal amounts.
More.
Or more. So the two that were first round. Oh, yeah, it could be first rounders for multiple. How many years? International pool that you can spend. They can restrict them on that. Oh, there's all kinds of things they can do. There's no doubt. And they're going to suffer. They're going to suffer for this. So, period.
And we're just 4 weeks away from spring training, which is unbelievable. We're live here at Middlebury College. We're talking with legendary Boston Globe personalities, ESPN personalities, Jackie McMullen and Bob Ryan, here on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com. You know, I was listening to former Red Sox and now current Boston radio host Lou Maloney recently, and he said the Red Sox have a perception problem in town. He goes, they're not as popular as they think they are, and they're not as popular as the Patriots. Do you see it that way on the ground floor?
Oh, the greatest transformation in Boston sports in my 55 years since I walked in 1964 at BC is the juxtaposition of the Red Sox and of the Patriots, the rise of the Patriots.
Yes. Yep.
From number four, without any question in the pecking order, until the moment they hired Bill Parcells. That's where this all started. The turnaround began with Bill Parcells giving them a credibility they lacked prior to that, okay? Until what now? I've been saying up to recent times, well, it's 1-1A.
Right.
You know, well, no. It's one Patriots and it's two Red Sox, and there's no question about that.
Well, and the Red Sox, I'm not sure how long they're going to be honestly, because the Bruins fans are as resolute and as strong as they can possibly be. And the Celtics, if they win again, will pass the Red Sox. And I could, you know, I have two children who are in their 20s, and I can tell you, when they were little, they loved going to the Red Sox game. If of all the four teams they want to go see, it's last place for them.
Oh, wow.
If the game isn't fast enough, it isn't interesting enough to them, their attention is elsewhere.
Right.
So in my house, the Red Sox are fourth among my family.
And do you guys go to a lot of games? I mean,
of
you
course.
Go to all the games, but I mean, do the kids go to a lot of games?
I have a friend who has season tickets. He's seated to my left. I buy five games a year. But, you know, we have a partial
he
season ticket package to
right.
the Celtics. You know, my kids would kill to go to a Patriots game. And they're kind of coming around to hockey, which, of course, was my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Because I grew up, you know, as a Bobby Orr fan. And
right. Oh, geez.
In fact, our friend Bruce Kernblatt, by the way, is doing a great documentary. I'm giving him a little plug, here,
good.
On Bobby Orr that's coming out on NHL Network. Do you know about this?
Yeah. I do not.
Yeah.
But the Bruins have been my team since day with Bruins and the Whalers. I never knew what to do when the Whalers were in town. I always cheered for a tie, but back when they had ties. But, I mean, it was impossible. It seems cyclical to me as somebody who grew up in Boston. I'm a lifer and everything. I mean, you couldn't get a Bruins ticket during the early 70s for your life.
No, absolutely
you couldn't get
not.
A Celtics ticket for the longest time.
Well,
Bob would know.
The Bird era.
But that was in the 80s.
And
in the 60s and 70s, you could get a Celtics
sure. I remember sitting on the benches at Schaefer Stadium for $10, and the place was half empty. And Fenway Park, I'd sit with my dad for $1.50 in the bleachers. There'd be 100 people in the bleachers on a Tuesday night.
I can tell you, talk about the Patriots prior to Parcells and that fallow area in the late 70s, early 80s. I was doing the sports reporters in New York, and I would fly back on the 11 o'clock shuttle and land at Logan about 12. And I was able to get in my seat at Foxborough before the game started at 1 because there was no traffic on Route 1 impeding my progress to get to the parking lot and get into the ballpark. It all started – just so people know, it all started with Parcells. That gave him credibility, and that led the chain of events that led – and, of course, we all know Belichick and Brady.
Well, I think, too, you have to give Kraft a little credit because, you know, so when I was a kid, my dad worked for Robert Kraft. He was his top salesperson at Rand Whitney, so we used to sit in the – Rand Whitney seats, which were no different than any of the others because they were all benches and they all stunk and it was freezing and there were drunk people hitting your children off the head with a beer can, which happened to me when I was a kid.
Wow.
And I remember my dad telling me, you know, it's just a disgrace. We're not going to come anymore. And Robert Kraft, of course, as you know, tried to buy the Red Sox first, failed in that, and then turned his attention to the Patriots. So I do think that he changed the culture down there, which convinced Parcells it was worth coming, and the stadium and all of that. So.
James Butch Orthwine hired Parcells. He inherited Parcells.
Oh.
Yeah, right. But he's the one that – see, I think it started with the transformation of the stadium.
Okay.
Became a fan-friendly place. You brought your family there. You know, very different.
And the decision that Parcells made to take – Drew Bledsoe and not Rick Meyer, and that was not an easy decision for other people would have taken Rick Meyer.
By the way, first text, Bob and Jackie, great guests, so knowledgeable and well-spoken. We never get that. We don't get knowledgeable and well-spoken. I don't know why.
I wonder, because you're not well-spoken. But we also get another one. Jackie McMullen is great. Bob Ryan is amazing and one of the best guests on the Dan Le Batard Show.
Oh, wow. So there you go.
You got to be ready. When I get that call the night before from Mike Ryan, his producer, I'll tell you, I start worrying, you know, because if you're not careful, you'll say something you regret. It happened to me. It happened. And
it's happened more than once, my friend.
So I've been on my guard ever since.
So you guys have seen all the big storylines in Boston for the last 50 years, it seems like. Where does how the Patriots handle Tom Brady, where is that in the pantheon of storylines that you guys have covered?
Well, first of all, Brady, I was 50 years
ago. Bob said 55 years, so that's why I said 50-plus years.
I just want to point that out.
Not you.
Okay, thank
you. Just Bob.
So, anyway, Brady is right up with Orr. See, I think people forget Orr, and I never will.
Yeah.
And just what happened, the way Bobby Orr captured our region and changed everything.
Yes.
And Larry Bird to a lesser degree, because there were so many of others before him. And, right. and you can argue, well, Paul Pierce, perhaps KG afterwards. Mm. But Brady, because it's football, and because they were the worst franchise on earth, the Patsies, and because he was a sixth-round pick, it just was, you couldn't make up the story of Tom Brady replacing this very popular quarterback, Drew Bledsoe, we all adored, and really didn't do anything except for get his chest sheared in half.
Thank you, Mo Lewis.
Right. You know what I'm saying? So I think everything to do with Brady, he will, at least in my mind, go down as the most iconic, so far, athlete in sports history, and that's hard for me to say.
Bill
as someone
Russell.
Bill Russell, unfortunately, none of us appreciated him. Yeah. Bob did. But very few others did. I mean, and Bill Russell at the peak of his career was playing in front of 2,000, 3,000 fans.
Prior to Brady's ascension, the Patriots, I argue, were the only team in the National Football League whose greatest career player was not a skill position player.
What?
We had to reach so far. No. And so John Hanna was the best Patriot of all time until Tom Brady took over the honor. And no other team had to go outside of a quarterback, wide receiver, or running back for that honor. That's number one. Number two, on the Rushmore, there's no question in my mind who the Rushmore is in Boston. Okay.
Right.
And it kills me. And I remember I wrote this column when I decided I had to say it. I had to kick Larry out of the Rushmore.
Oh, no.
I had to kick him off.
Well, it's
my
Russell.
Goodness. Because it's Russell.
Okay.
It's Ted.
Right.
It's Bobby. And it's Tom. And that's that.
Oh,
and I don't want to hear any other arguments. Larry would be the next one up, but no.
Russell, 11-13.
You know, Russell permanent security guard, if you say that.
But I remember when I wrote that column. You know, I had the Mount Rushmore people and other demigods of Boston sports were up in the great sports bar in the sky or lunchtime.
Yes.
And they were all talking about, oh, I guess we got to make room for this kid, you know, kind of thing, you know, and all that. So, but no, there's no question.
Who?
Brady. And for the modern fan, the modern being anyone under 30,
right.
30, I would, there's not much doubt that Brady's their number one, and period. And nobody, they're not even going to.
But also,
unless
too.
It's a poppy. There's a poppy faction,
right?
You know, to be up on that. I understand that.
But the other reason you have to say it's Brady too is because the NFL is a league that thrives on parity. They don't want dynasties. They go out of their way to make sure there are no dynasties.
Right. Yeah.
And yet Brady and the Patriots have defied that.
Who's the bad guy in the meeting? Brady? Is Belichick there? Is Kraft there? Is it just his agent speaking to Kraft? Does Kraft have to say, we have to move on? Or does Tom say, I need $30 million, and then they say, okay, now we're moving on? Who's the bad guy in this whole thing?
I have my own thoughts on that.
Well, I that's a good way of phrasing. I hadn't thought about it in those terms. I know. The only thing we know.
Right.
Brady has indicated that he definitely is not going to retire, that he definitely wants to play.
Yes.
And who's the intriguing thing, I can't answer your question. I'm talking around here.
Yeah, that's okay.
Jackie wants to try?
I'm going
to
answer it.
Try. But here's my thing. The most interesting thing he said lately is that he has something to prove.
Right.
Now, wait a minute. Let's take a 20-second on that one, okay?
Right.
His legacy is firm and fixed and secure and blah, 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 blah. And that last pick six is not going to be defining him. You know, the last time we saw him, and if he were to retire, that wasn't going to be held against
just
him.
Just a bad
period.
Way to leave.
If he,
right.
But what has he got to prove? I can only think of one thing. One. And that is, I can win without Bill.
Exactly.
That's the only thing he's got to prove that I can think of.
Exactly.
Well, unless he wants to prove to everybody that everybody thought he was done this year, that he's not. And by the way, all the, you know, he didn't have the great receivers. No, the line at times had holes in it. But Tom Brady didn't play well this year, Bob. Okay. So let's be clear on this. So Tom Brady has something to prove that he's not done. That's what I think. And I also think this. You asked who the bad guy is going to be.
Yeah, who's the bad guy here?
We all know who it's going to be because he doesn't mind being it. And it's Belichick. Belichick is going to be fine with being the bad guy. If everyone wants to blame him for moving on from Tom Brady, he's fine with that. Ooh. By the way, he was fine with it a couple years ago before they traded
Garoppolo. Yeah, you got to go back to Garoppolo.
Right, but they couldn't afford to pay both.
Start the story there.
Right.
But so Kraft, I know Robert pretty well. I've known him my whole life.
That makes Kraft the bad guy if he doesn't stick up for Tom.
Well, I think see, the most interesting thing that's been said all since all this ended was when Robert Kraft says, I hope and pray Tom will give us a chance. What are you talking about? If you hope and pray, then make it happen.
Yeah. Right.
Give him 3 years, all the money he wants. Now, of course, that's absurd. But maybe that you settle at two. It is still possible, if you're Robert Kraft, to keep Tom here, unless, and I haven't talked to Tom about this, so I can't honestly tell you for sure, unless he's made up his mind a while ago that, you know what, I have to move on. I have to move on because I need to win without Bill. I don't believe that, honestly. I really don't. I don't believe that. I don't think that's how Tom thinks.
The cleaning out the stuff and the, you know, moving to...
It's all fine. It's all fine.
It's all good, huh?
But to me, it doesn't mean... until it happens, until you take the step, I don't... then I will believe it. And I'm not saying it isn't possible or even plausible.
Right.
I'm just saying that when you end an NFL season or in the midst of an NFL season, and, you know, you've seen the Tom versus time when he says, every game I play, I feel like I've been hit by a pickup truck. Now, during this year, when people are saying, are you hurt? Are you hurt? No, 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 I'm not hurt. But I feel like I've been hit by a pickup truck 16 times. So it's the wrong time when that 16 hits by a pickup truck ends for you to make a determination about your future.
Right.
Because you're emotional, you're sore, you're mad at your coach, you're mad at your owner, you didn't give us what we wanted, you gave me Antonio Brown, then you took him away from me. All of these things. When it comes to March, is Robert Kraft going to let him walk? Is Tom Brady going to take a deep breath and say, I'm out of here? Until I see it, I'm not convinced.
I can't believe we've gone 20 minutes without talking about hoops yet with you guys.
It's okay.
You wrote a story earlier about Kyrie already making negative waves in Brooklyn. I mean, I mean, he hasn't done anything lately, although I guess he had a nice night last night.
But he had 32 last night.
Yeah, but I mean, how bad was it in Boston with him, really?
So it was bad. But I'll say it. I said it before, and I will say it again. To put all the blame firmly at his feet is a mistake. I'm telling you, it's a mistake. Now, was he moody? Yes. Do I wish he would change his mindset?
And, yeah.
You know, we talk a lot about mental health. He talks a lot about mental health. I hope, and I don't know if he is or he isn't, but I hope he could benefit, I think, from a little mental health counseling. I've told him that to his face, so I don't mind telling you on the radio.
Wow. No, and how did he take that?
Not well. But I just think he's an incredibly talented kid. One of the most talented players I've been around. I've watched him work. He works hard. There are so many qualities we should all fall in love with, but he has a short fuse. He gets frustrated easily. He was not a good teammate. But guess what? Those young guys, they thought they had arrived because why? They barely lost to a bad Cleveland Cavaliers team in 7 games, and they choked on their own floor. So they got ahead of themselves. They couldn't handle it. Terry Rozier didn't like his role. Jaylen Brown pouted at different times.
Yes.
They've all learned from that. Jaylen's having a great year. Rozier's gone, so there you go. And so, but to blame it, Kyrie completely, Brad should have taken a stronger tact in the locker room, and I'm a great fan of Brad Stevens. We both are. But he also shouldn't have force-fed Gordon Hayward into the lineup. All of those things contributed. To just put it all at Kyrie's feet is not fair.
How much blame does Al Horford get? Because he's the one big veteran presence that team had, and I feel like when you're so young, we're always looking for the one veteran that can calm the room down, and that's not him. That wasn't him.
Brady, it's not his personality. It's not his personality in Philadelphia either. It's just not who he is. Now, he's a very fine player, and I would always want him on my team, but I would not expect him to be the guy in the locker room telling Kyrie, cut it out. The person in the locker room that did that was Marcus Smart, and he did do it and loves Kyrie. See, that's the thing about Marcus. Marcus, who, by the way, has his own moments, for sure. He's a pretty combustible guy in his own right. But he was the true leader on that team last year, and he did what he could. But he wasn't good enough basketball-wise to have the effect on the court.
Bob Ryan, Jackie McMullen with us here on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, live at Middlebury College. We got a couple minutes left with you guys. So, Bob, you know, we've met a lot of characters. Spaceman Lee is a Red Sox guy that we've gotten to know on this show. Who are some of the best characters that you've had a chance to cover and be around?
By far and away, the most intriguing personality that I covered was Dave Cowens.
Oh, yeah.
And there's nobody like him. And simply this. He was Hall of Fame talent, an electrifying style, and the most intellectually curious athlete, at least among the Celtics that I covered. Not to say he's a raging intellectual, but he is a curious person with an open mind, and he's the most uninhibited personality. And everything put together, he was by far my favorite personality. Larry was the best player.
Yeah, naturally. Of course.
Okay, and Havlicek was like right there, 1A, or one very, very close. Clearly that, and I'm very, I was very fond of the late John Havlicek, and loved to watch him play. But Dave Cowens is the answer to that question by far.
Was he the last player coach in the NBA? I think it was Cowens.
Was he? Probably was the
last player. He might have been. Yeah, there's not two.
And that's an incredible story in and of itself. That, that was less than 2 years after he walked away from the team.
That's true.
For his 2 month sabbatical.
To drive a cab, which Larry never forgave him for, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, Larry actually told me once, I'll never forgive him for that.
You have who's your most interesting person? Or
gosh, there's way too many to start. I'll start with Barkley because he was the most incredible, quirky, interesting, infuriating, wonderful people I've ever been around. When he blew out his Achilles, he was playing for the Houston Rockets.
Right.
They were in Philadelphia. He was on his way up to Boston, blew out his Achilles. I was supposed to meet him in Boston, do a story, blew out his Achilles. I'm like, oh, this is terrible. What about my story? No, I mean, I was really, I felt badly for him. So I saw him afterwards, and he was crying, and I said, I'm so sorry. He said, I'm going to Boston anyway. I love Boston. I'm going to Boston anyway. And I spent the day with him in his suite at the Ritz.
Oh.
And just watching the range of emotions, the regrets for things he did, regrets for things he didn't do. He's crazy, wonderful, infuriating all at the same time. So he's one of them. And the other one is Patrick Ewing, who people don't know very well.
Oh, no.
And I got to know very, very well.
Really?
And I spent 2 years getting him to sit down with, you know this story. I would go down to the Knicks. He was playing for the Knicks. I'd go into the locker room. He said, I don't do interviews. I said, I know. I'm not here to talk to you. And I'd talk to Alan Houston or whoever was next to him. And I did this, no lie, for about a year and a half till he finally realized, okay, maybe she's okay. And then he finally sat down with me and did a pretty searing story about what he went through in Boston growing up. Had a language, a little bit of a speech impediment, had some learning disabilities, chose Georgetown over Boston College, all the horrible things that happened in the wake of that, people holding up signs, Patrick Ewing is an ape.
Except you know, can't read.
Right, I
Patrick
remember that.
Can't read,
right.
Some of the things he went through, and yet went on to be an incredibly successful person, and you know, he's a sneaky, interesting, much better guy than you think, because you used to just see him scowl. He's really a pretty sweet guy.
One of the great anticipated phenomena of the Dream Team was the friendship between Larry
and Harry.
And Harry and Larry, as they got nicknamed, as Patrick and Larry. They became the duo. No one saw that coming.
Right.
I was going to say, I was speaking of apropos of Charles, on the short list of things I would like to see again in the NBA, in the annals of the NBA, is Charles Barkley, defensive rebound, and taking off the 505 Express, coming down the tracks, and ending up, ba-boom!
And, you know, during that Dream Team, he'd be down shooting basketball, and he'd go down, the guys would be shooting, you know, Jordan and Pippen, everybody, Bird, and they'd be Magic, they'd be down there shooting, and Charles looking down, they go, no, dude, down that end. They're like, what? They go, non-champions, down that end, Charles. You got a lot of that.
But he was the best player on the team.
Yeah. He was.
He played best closest to his potential.
Yeah, he was.
I guess the last question that I have, and I heard Tony Kornheiser say this once, and he, like you, is writer, radio, TV, but he said writing was always the thing he identified with most. At your guys' core, do you still see yourselves as writers more so than anything else?
Only 99%. All the rest is a nice addendum to my life. I look in the mirror, I'm a writer. That's what I'm most proud of. I'm just lucky that I've been granted other forms for all the reasons. I enjoy radio, I enjoy TV, extra income's nice, but I'm a writer. I want to be remembered as a writer.
Television's 10 times more lucrative.
Yep.
And
easier.
I was going to say, and writing's 20 times harder. And it's absolutely, when I came back to ESPN after all those years, I said, I'm not only taking this job if you let me write.
And, you know, you can't let you leave until we want to have one of our listeners take a shot at you saying, come on, Russell played in the league with 8 teams. He played against podiatrists.
If Bill Russell were airlifted back into the NBA today, with the exact same everything, body and mind, and everything else, I can guarantee he would lead the league in rebounding and block shots every year as long as he chose to.
Wow.
Period. He's a
and
better rebounder
threes.
Than anybody. He's a better rebounder than anybody in the game today, or has been since he quit. And he invented the block shot. He invented it. Okay.
Yeah.
He made it an art
form. Don't hurt him.
It's okay. No, it's fine. They take it out on me.
I just want this person to understand. I don't care.
Well, see, the other thing about his block shots.
I don't care if it's an inter-squad scrimmage at the left.
Well,
he's the greatest shoot shot blocker and rebounder in history of the game.
But explain, too, why he's the greatest shot blocker, because he didn't just block the shot into the stands.
Yes, he
blocked the shot.
Started fast breaks. Nowadays, it's swatted to five rows. I love it.
Well, one more message is a parting shot. George in Burlington says, a few years ago, I accidentally sat in Jackie McMullen's seat at TD Garden. She politely kicked me out. It was an honor. Sorry, I was supposed to be one section over. So that was for George in Burlington. So.
All right, George.
Bob Ryan, Jackie McMullen, thank you so much for stopping by. We appreciate
it.
Our listeners just love it. The text line is blowing up. We'd love to do it again. Have a great time tonight at Middlebury, and thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, we'll come back. We'll take a break. We'll talk about something. You're in the huddle. What do a point be the game?